Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich from Crime Talk, and thanks for watching. First on the docket, an update in the Lori Loughlin and her fashion designer husband, Mossimo Giannulli, are going to plead guilty. Second, Ahmed Arbery video surfaces, and it's not very flattering. But in the big picture, is it even relevant? Third, Megan Boswell case update. Any news on the death of Evelyn Boswell? Fourth, a witness killing case out of Maryland and West Virginia. Next on the docket, don't mind that body over there on the floor. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. Scott Reich here from Crime Talk. We have a busy docket, but if you have not already subscribed, we would ask that you please do so. Additionally, if you like what we're doing, hit that like button and please leave us a comment. First, Lori Loughlin and her famous fashion designer husband, Mossimo Giannulli, are going to plead guilty in the Varsity Blues case. Now, each are going to plead guilty as it relates to wire fraud. And we haven't seen the actual plea agreement yet. However, the proposed disposition has been laid out. What is expected to happen and what the United States Attorney will recommend is that Lori Loughlin will spend 60 days in prison, the Federal Bureau of Prisons, and she will pay a $150,000 fine and have 2 years of supervised release with community service. Now, supervised release is the nice word for parole, all right? She will be a convicted felon based upon her plea. Her husband, Giannulli, he's going to get 5 months in prison and pay a $250,000 fine and have 2 years of supervised release with at least 250 hours of community service. You may say, why are the sentences different? One of the things that the federal courts try to do is avoid disparity when it comes to sentencing people with the similar offense. Well, clearly it looks like the husband, Mr. Giannulli, was a little more involved. In fact, even bragged about how he had to get his daughters into USC and that he had to kind of work the system. Now, both of these two individuals knew that their daughters were never going to be on the crew team. They had never crewed a day in their life, but they were taking photos so that they could represent that they were going to be on the crew team. This, I think, would have been a very difficult case for the defense to win, and it's not over yet. Now, when Ms. Loughlin and her husband appear in federal court in Boston, they will go in front of a judge. They will be placed under oath and told that they have to make their statement as to what they did. First, the judge will make sure they understand the rights they have that are guaranteed by the Constitution, and that they're giving up those rights, and it's a knowing voluntary waiver, which means nobody's forcing them. They're doing this of their own free will, and also because, in fact, they are guilty. And the judge will more than likely ask them, in their own words, what they did and why that conduct was wrongful. That is required in every federal court that I have ever been in. Now, the proposed or the recommended sentence in this particular case is simply that. Under the federal rules, there are not what they call stipulated sentences, which is basically the prosecution and defense have come up with a deal and the judge is going to rubber stamp it. I've had judges say, I don't do those in my courtroom because otherwise I'm just a puppet, you know, that he was appointed to make those decisions and determine what the appropriate sentence could be. And everybody, at least in the jurisdictions that I practice in federal court, is that even though it's a recommendation, the defendant has to understand that the ultimate decision is up to the judge, including the maximum sentence. Now, it's very unlikely under the sentencing guidelines that they would be in the maximum sentence range, and the judge would really have to explain why he would deviate from the advisory sentencing guidelines. And here, Both Laughlin and her husband are able to argue for what they call a sentencing variance, where they can go below or recommend to the judge that they go below the sentencing recommendation. So, and instead of even getting prison time, there could be in-home detention. Now, both of the daughters, Olivia and Isabel, who are no longer at USC, were never charged in this particular case. But I think one could have easily made the argument that they could have been charged based upon their involvement in this scheme. And, you know, we've talked about this before. This is rather frustrating. When you have parents that want to give everything to their kid, which is absolutely perfectly wonderful, they could have had the best tutors, could have gone probably to enter school they wanted to, and they wouldn't even have had to have lied to get in. These kids were given every opportunity, and everywhere they go, they'll always be known as the kids that couldn't get into USC on their own. Next on the docket, another video related to Ahmed Arbery has been released. And this is the body-worn camera video where the police are having contact with Mr. Arbery, as well as several of his friends or associates leaving a Walmart store where they were allegedly stealing a large television. Mr. Arbery, we know, actually pled guilty to this particular case and resulted in the revocation of his probation as it related to the case where he had taken a gun to school and was caught. Now, the question one must ask is, why is this showing up now? Well, because people want to know, what was Mr. Arbery like? Well, guess what? The jury will never see this particular video. I don't know who's been able to get these videos. I don't know if the police are releasing these videos or friends of the McMichaels are helping or asking people to release these videos. But the reality of it is, it may help in the court of public opinion, but it has little to no relevance whatsoever as it relates to the trial, if the McMichaels go to trial, as it relates to the death of Mr. Arbery. I have had a lot of people accusing me, saying that I was being soft on Mr. Arbery, that we weren't telling the truth. Well, guess what? The video just came out, and it still does not change my opinion that Travis McMichael should not have got out of that vehicle in any way with a shotgun. He wasn't making a citizen's arrest, and he was the initial aggressor. So to all my critics, that's all right. I'm telling you, it's not going to matter at the end of the day. Now, understand the McMichaels are entitled to, and I would be the first one to zealously represent them if I was their attorney. But I'm not, and I'm looking at it as objectively as I can based upon what we know as far as the facts and what we know as far as the law. And so will their attorneys have to look at it in that regard and have to have some real conversation as it relates to the realities of this case with their clients. Next on the docket, we have a sponsor here at Crime Talk, and it is in fact a search database that is willing to help Crime Talk, and we are going to do our best to help them. And if you go to crimetalksearch.com, you can go there. And if you want to search anybody's name, you could search anybody's name in the database, and it will search public databases faster than you could individually do any of this. And it costs less than it would take to get a professional investigator who really are using a lot of these same investigative tools. And a lot of people are really upset with me and said, oh my gosh, God, how could you possibly do this? PeopleFinder is a scam. Well, you know, I've used this stuff before personally. We used this just last week. We searched a witness in a case and found out that there was a civil fraud conviction. Well, that goes completely to one's credibility. We've used it in the past. And so you can get a one-month report, 1 month worth of reports with a membership of $9.95. Not a big deal. 3 months for $5.95. Tell me you haven't ever been sitting in bed and wanted to know if somebody has some dirt on them. if somebody has a deep, dark secret somewhere, something just doesn't feel right. Type in the person's name. If you have an account, you can run as many searches as you want. It covers business records, debt records, evictions, foreclosures, professional licenses, as well as criminal histories. You simply click the report on somebody's name, and all this information comes up. Now understand, nobody's saying you have to do this. This is a beautiful thing about America. You don't want to click. You don't want to go to crimetalksearch.com. That's okay. But if you do, you're welcome to do so, and you can say that I sent you. Next on the docket, Megan Boswell case update. For those of you who do not recall, Megan Boswell is the mother of 15-month-old Evelyn Boswell, who was found deceased on the property of the Boswell family, her grandmother. No charges have been brought in that particular case, and ultimately, the police arrested Megan Boswell on one count of false reporting. She was being held in custody on a $150,000 bond until now. The district attorney has returned an indictment in this particular case, whereupon she now has 10 more counts of false reporting. And what's interesting is these police officers must have been tag-teaming her, literally slapping each other's hand, going in and out of the room, asking where the child was, and she was lying. Because most of the charges take place on February 18th, where it is alleged that she made statements in response to a legitimate inquiry and that her intent was to obstruct or hinder the police officers. And like I said, so the first day was February 18th, false statement to Detective Tracy Haraz. Then it was same day, Detective Lieutenant Steve Williams, Captain Joe Strickler. On February 19th, she apparently made, once again, false statements to Jeff Blanton and Todd Wilcox. February 20th, false statements to Detective Joe Strickler. February 20th, false statements allegedly to Tennessee Bureau of Investigation agent Todd Gratz and Sullivan County Sheriff's Detective Matt Price. February 20th, David Gratz and Matt Price once again. February 20th, Agent Gratz and Sullivan County Sheriff Detective Sergeant Matt Price. And once again on February 23rd to Chris Wilhoit of the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, agent in charge. We'll see what the plea, if any, will be at the next court date or if they will seek a continuance. Seems to be a common trend where attorneys can't speak with their clients to prepare and effectively be able to represent them at the court hearings. We'll be watching, and maybe one of these days they'll be able to make a case against somebody as it relates for the death of Evelyn Boswell. We'll be waiting and we'll be watching. Next on the docket, two missing Maryland women that were deemed in danger were murdered in West Virginia. Two people are now charged. On April 6th, the family of Heather Grogg, 33, and 18-year-old Danielle Tyler reported them missing from Carroll County, Maryland. Soon after that, state police deemed these women were actually in danger. Grogg and Tyler apparently both knew a man by the name of David Sanford, who along with Monroe Merrill and John Black, who are now behind bars. The three men were charged with the first-degree murder and kidnapping in West Virginia in connection with the March 18th death of a man named Jonathan Riddle. Now police say that both Grogg and Tyler were also murdered. April Banner, 37, of Falling Waters, West Virginia, is charged with first-degree murder and conspiracy in the pair's death, while 22-year-old Jeffrey Smith Jr. of Westminster, Maryland, is not behind bars and is a fugitive from justice. It's alleged that Merrill arranged to have Grogg and Tyler brought to Brainerd's house in West Virginia to kill them, according to the complaint. Smith, along with Sanford and Emily Rose Day, allegedly drove them. Day has been charged with an accessory after the fact. Tyler and Grogg were told that they would be safe at this location due to law enforcement's investigation into the Riddle homicide in Carroll County, Maryland. However, once there, the pair were killed, which Brainerd allegedly knew was the plan all along. Smith is believed to have shot Grace twice, while Brainer allegedly provided the plastic bag Sanford allegedly used to kill Tyler. We'll continue to follow that case, and I don't know if it just seems like there's a trend of defendants trying to eliminate witnesses in a particular case. That is the worst thing one could do. First of all, it shows huge consciousness of guilt, and you're going to get charged with it, and the hammer is going to come down on you so hard. And in this particular case, if assuming these people are convicted because they're given the presumption of innocence, these are the type of cases where the death penalty is considered. You can't mess with witnesses. Next on the docket, an Indiana man has been charged with murder after police allegedly discovered his girlfriend's decomposing remains on the floor of his apartment covered with blankets. Nancy Cole's adult son had reported her missing on May 16th after not hearing from her or seeing from her in several days. On May 18th, police received a call from Nancy's Cole's friend who found the woman's car outside the boyfriend's apartment building. The friend allegedly told the police that Bryant refused to open this door despite her repeated knocks. When the police made contact, they were ultimately able to make their way into the apartment, whereupon they immediately noticed something of the living room floor that had been covered with blankets that appeared to be the size of a human body. The police removed the blankets and located a deceased female with multiple stab wounds in her back. Bryant was immediately detained and transported to the police department for an interview. Mr. Bryant has been charged with one count of murder, and it's unclear as to how many days the body had been there. The reason why I bring this case up is that there's some interesting legal issues. Now, normally if the police come knocking on the door and you won't let them in, but they're investigating a missing person, there may be what they call exigent circumstances. So they don't necessarily need a warrant to go in. Now, however, if Mr. Bryant had refused the officers to come in and they persisted or somehow made their way in, there could be a potential motion to suppress, and the deceased body could in fact potentially be suppressed. Obviously, if there's no body that can be admitted into evidence, or the fact of a dead body not be admitted into evidence, there would be no case. So we'll watch this case to see if the police did it correctly or if they got a little overzealous, which could potentially harm the prosecution of Mr. Bryant. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. The first thing that comes to mind on today's dumb criminal contestant is pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. Johnny Angel Robles was arrested by the Riverside Police Department on May 20th of 2020. Now, you may ask, what allegedly did Mr. Robles do to wind him up in trouble? Well, apparently about 20 a.m. on the 20th of May, a business owner reported several hundred dollars worth of camera equipment was stolen from his shop downtown. The shop owner had been walking in the neighborhood when a man approached him, trying to sell him the very equipment that he had stolen. The man, later identified as 25-year-old Johnny Angel Robles, was the man selling the items. The owner recognized the equipment and went back to his store, which he found had been broken into. He then called the police, and they tried to detain Robles. When the officers arrived, Mr. Robles fled, chased down, and ultimately arrested. Robles was on probation for violence against the police and other violations related to theft, drugs, restraining orders, and a sundry of other matters, according to the police. Mr. Robles had recently been released from jail just the other day due to the California's policy of zero bail. Now, Mr. Robles, like I said, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. Had you simply just taken the equipment and gone about your merry way, you may have possibly got away with this. But no, you had to immediately try to sell it. And Mr. Robles, do you really think that people legitimately sell camera equipment on the street corner, right? No, they don't. It's like going to Canal Street in New York. You know, they sell you the watches and it's not real or it's stolen. Mr. Robles, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the week. Now, if you would like to get the same potential prize gift that the dumb criminal could possibly get, which is Crime Talk merchandise, but you don't want to go to the trouble of actually getting yourself arrested and doing something so stupid that we would recognize you a dumb criminal contestant and ultimately being the winner of the week, you could go to the link below and order a Crime Talk mug yourself. Hit that little button and bam, they will send it to you. Additionally, we would like to take this little time to say thank you to our Patreon members. And when I get done with this, I am going to be sending video responses to the questions that our Patreon members have sent to us directly. Now, what I'm really excited to tell you all about is that the Crime Talk podcast, yes, you can listen to the Crime Talk podcast if you can't listen to it on YouTube, which is getting huge downloads. We are now in the top 50 podcasts in the true crime genre. Once again, I would simply like to thank each and every one of you for taking the time to watch or to listen or to become a Patreon member. We appreciate you. We appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time on Crime Talk.